Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We're talking history. We're talking musical history on this podcast.
Welcome, folks, to Talking Musical History Podcast. I'm Kevin.
And I'm Chris. We know we promised that we would be moving on to Annie right now, but we had to give you a mini episode to just keep you going. So instead of talking about Annie, we're going to be talking about the Oscars and, more importantly, coming around the corner, the Tony Awards.
Tony.
We started talking about this topic about a year ago when it was kind of rumored in some kind of way that maybe Hamilton, because of its premiere on Disney Plus, would be eligible for a Oscar. The Tony Awards started back on Easter Sunday, April 6, 1947, in the Waldorf Astoria's Durand Ballroom.
That's pretty cool.
Unlike many people, including myself, thought, it is not actually named for a guy named Tony. It is named after the late actress, director, and producer, along with wartime leader of the American theater wing, Antoinette Perry.
Very cool.
Vera Allen was Perry's successor for this black dress-coded evening of dinner, dancing, and entertainment. First performers were Mickey Rooney, Herb Shriner, Ethel Waters, and David Wayne. Vincent Sardi from Sardi's Famous Eatery.
Oh, yeah. That shows up a lot.
Eat at Sardi's every day. If you're a big famous producer, was given a special award along with Jose Ferrer, Arthur Miller, Helen Hayes, Ingrid Bergman, Patricia Neal,
Elia Kazan,
and Agnes DeMille. We could afford this ticket. It was only $7.50.
That's pretty cool. That's actually quite reasonable price considering.
Mm-hmm. It would go up to $10 the following year after it gained some success. WOR and the Mutual Network broadcast it on radio. However, starting in 1956, you could catch it on television, but only shown locally on Dumont's Channel 5. This brought some new talented performers like Catherine Cornell, Guthrie McClintock, Ralph Bellamy, Joan Crawford, Alfred D. Legare Jr., Gilbert Miller, Shirley Booth, Carol Channing, Joan Fontaine, Dreamy Paul Newman.
Dreamy Paul.
Well, I mean, he was considered kind of dreamy back in the day.
No. I mean, like, yeah. Paul Newman is an attractive human being. I always think of him in Cool Hand Luke. Okay. That's the thing that always comes up. And, like, you know, there's definitely, like, this whole, like, him, like, sprawled out on the table, like you know, topless, like Jesus. So, like, when you think, when you say that, that's what hits my head, because watching Cool Hand Luke in film school.
Geraldine Page, along with Paul Newman, Anne Bancroft, Sidney Poitier, Robert Goulet, Henry Fonda, and others. Following the ultimate untimely death of Helen Menken, not related to Allen, who was the chairwoman of the wing, the 1966 Tonys were presented in the Rainbow Room without entertainment for the first and only time. The first inaugural national broadcast was the following year, headed by now Isabel Stevenson as the president of the Schubert Theater, now hosting instead of a hotel ballroom. CBS started to air the Tonys in 1978, receiving numerous Emmy Awards.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, the first 2 years, winners would receive a scroll and either a gold money clip for men or a compact for women. In 1949, United Scenic Artists ran a contest for a suitable model for the award. Herman Rose won that contest, and with disc-shaped medallion that remains in use. Since 1968, the Tony medallion was mounted on a black pedestal with curved armature, with a tracking number for each one. One side of the disc is done before the award is presented, with the comedy and tragedy masks, along with the name of Annette Perry, while the other side is engraved after the winner has been chosen, with their name, category of award, and the production and year. Antoinette Perry was born June 27th, 1888, inspired by actress, playwright Rachel Cruthers, directing her own plays, led Perry to direct. She was wealthy from playing the stock market and her relationships. She was an independent woman. Along with her work in the theater, she was a co-founder of the theater wing of Allied Relief, now the American Theater Wing, that started back in World War II. During this time, she got the support from Rodgers and Hammerstein, who helped cheer up the troops during fighting overseas. Brock Pemberton memorialized her with the nickname Tony, and it stuck.
That's pretty cool. That's such a clear-cut story, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, I was interested to learn about it because it's something, you know, I've grown up watching in the Tony Awards since I can remember, and loving those moments that define who we are as a culture, who I am as a human being at different times in my life, and reflecting on how much progress we have come, but also how far we can go.
Yeah, I'll have to admit, I never really watched the Tonys until Neil Patrick Harris started hosting them.
Oh yeah.
And I wasn't about to like skip out on the ability to like see what that was like, and like, you know, watching the Tonys was pretty cool, 100%. I just never, like, I was more film related than anything else, so I would always watch the Oscars, which is really funny because, like, I stopped watching the Oscars around the same time I started watching the Tonys. Really great award ceremony. You know, if you think about it, it's sort of like Broadway's connection to be able to get into television, get their opportunity to see, get the general public around to go out to see Broadway, to see theater, and enjoy that. It also gives them, you know, the Broadway, the opportunity to be able to earn an Emmy, right?
Yeah.
Like Lin-Manuel, you know, who, you know, this is a little bit about.
Well, I mean, he is Hamilton, so.
You know, when you're talking about like a Pulitzer, an Emmy, a Grammy, a Tony, like, you know, like he, like Hamilton's name is all, mm-hmm. on all of those. I mean, and don't get me wrong, Lin has done other things, but I mean, like, you know, like he.
Moana, In the Heights.
Yeah, but I mean, like, he is the reason why that show is so prevalent in our society. Like, a lot of people have said that, oh man, like, you know, Lin-Manuel is like the rock star, like the first rock star of Broadway. And then it's like, wow, did they all forget about Andrew Lloyd Webber? That's too bad.
As a person who studied musical theater, Andrew Lloyd Webber is, I will say, the most accessible. He is the most, he speaks to like everyone. All of his is the most marketable musicals that have ever been made.
That's true.
Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. Jesus Christ Superstar. Jellicle Cats come out tonight. Jellicle Cats. He brought me into musicals. I mean, my first musical experience was very much like Randy Rainbow, although I wasn't kicking and screaming, apparently, as opposed to, I was very happy to go see Cats, the musical. And I remember dancing as much as I could to Rum Tum Tugger and all the other, you know, McCavity and yeah.
So Andrew Lloyd Webber helped build your relationship with musical theater.
Yeah.
Yeah. I oddly enough, I would have to say the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. My mom took me to see Cats in Detroit at an early age.
We might have been to the same production. Who knows?
Might have been to the same production. Who knows? And yeah, I mean, like, it was a cool show to watch. And I recognize that that's coming from a child memory because, you know, I look back at like a TV show like He-Man or G.I. Joe and I go, oh, okay. I'd never noticed the things going on there, but that's fine. you know, like Cats is really just like a dancing spectacle with like a really like boss, like main song rather.
Memory.
Yeah, memory. It's their bazooka. Right, like you get to that point, and like, you know, like let's see if anyone can have a dry eye by the end of this song.
That's the secret of Andrew Lloyd Webber. He has one major song in each musical that he has done, and that one major song is what's got him to where he is. He has one killer song. The rest can be completely forgettable. But if you have Don't Cry For Me, Argentina, Memory, Close Every Door, musical theater royalty right there.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, you follow a formula and you keep to it.
That's how you get Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber. Much respect.
Much respect, definitely.
But I believe in terms of king of musical or musical theater grandpa, as I like to call him, in a very loving, endearing, and hopefully I meet you someday, Stephen Sondheim.
Oh yeah, Sondheim. Like, he's the pinnacle, right? Like, everybody agrees.
Right. Musical theater would not be what it is today if it had not been for Sondheim. And yes, Stephen Schwartz as well.
I honestly, like, here's a weird thing, and I know this isn't really, like, musical related, but I think this is a good think piece. Yes. I think Sondheim is very similar to, like, Dan Harmon is to, like television. Okay. Because, like, Sondheim is, like, super respected.
Yes.
But he's not commercial because his stuff is just, like, human.
It's human. It's Sunday in the Park with George. Assassins.
It's Company.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and these aren't comfortable subjects, right? And there's like a lot of like what's going on. Like, and that's sort of the cool thing about it. Like, Dan Harmon's the same way, where like, you know, you have like shows like Community, you have shows like Rick and Morty. They're not neat and simple. There's a lot of like dirtiness in them. Mm-hmm. And like, definitely Community's a lot more marketable, much like Into the Woods is, yes. But it's still like not.
What about the Oscar?
Yeah, let's talk about the
history of the Oscars.
So the Oscars is much older than the Tonys, yeah. Which is really kind of surprising considering like theater is obviously older.
Older than film, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And you would be surprised that like, because you know Broadway existed before Hollywood, right?
Yeah, no, it so did.
So like it's just interesting that like, you know, we're talking about like Hollywood figuring this out in 1927. Before the Tonys were put together, which is like amazing. So Louis B. Mayer, who helped start the studio Metro Golden Mayer. You guys probably recognize that lion roaring. He wanted to build a way to unify the five divisions of the five departments of filmmaking.
It was actors, directors, producers, technicians, and writers.
Right. So those were the original five, but now there's 17 to this day. We're having actors, casting directors, cinematographers, costume designers, directors, documentarians, executives, film editors, makeup artists and hairstylists, music producers, public relations, short films and feature animations, sound, visual effects, and writers. That is so many different branches. Whenever you see a close-up of a picture of an Oscar, you see the statue, which has always been relatively the same size. There have been some like sort of free and funky versions of the statue. They actually, just a random tidbit, they made a version of a statue for a ventriloquist that was wooden, that like actually had the ability to like move its mouth.
For a famous vaudeville star.
Tons of different Oscars like a 13 and a half inch tall statue, 8.5 pounds, what they start giving out in 1929, right before the Great Depression.
It was sculpted by George Stanley.
And it was designed by Cedric Gibbons, who actually won 11 Oscar awards. You know, just like everything else in the film industry, it's all collaborative.
After this message, we'll be right back.
And up until 2009, winners had to give the Oscar back for a week to engrave it and attach the plaque. But now they do that the same night with 3D printing technology.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. There was actually a period in during World War II where they actually weren't even casting them with the special metal and case in gold. They would give like a fake statue, and then they said, hey, like, you hold on to this, and then when the war is over, we'll actually recast a statue for you and give you an actual Oscar. A tradition that they've maintained. They've maintained the height of the statue, they've maintained the weight of the statue, and the look of the statue all this time.
And how did the Oscar get its name?
So this is the thing that's sort of up for debate.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's like about three different stories around that. Let's talk about
Betty Davis.
Betty Davis, yeah. Academy Awards president for how long?
2 months.
Yeah, 2 months. Yeah. So she said it was reminded her of her husband's butt.
It was her husband's butt after he got out of the shower.
That's so specific. So I assume that Betty Davis's husband's butt was made of gold.
So she was president for 2 months because she was proposing that they cut the dinner and dancing along with not having the extras vote. Yeah, this is problematic, mainly because the reason is they, you know, according to her...
Yeah, she felt like they were a bit too uncouth to actually vote.
They didn't understand, and they could sway the election of the voting process.
Well, and really, and that's what it comes down to, right?
Is they like were
what,
literate. They didn't
what,
read,
what people they, want, right? Like
they didn't speak English.
She wanted her movies to win, and she was more concerned about, like, denying votes instead of making a better product. And mind you, like, being able to vote in the Academy Awards is a very, very, like, coveted thing.
It's a very elite position.
Super elite position. So, like, first off, only, like, 8,000 people, like, give or take, like, have that power right now. It is literally the most watched award show.
It is essentially like the Super Bowl.
It is the Super Bowl.
It is the Super Bowl of movies.
Like, honestly, the Super Bowl should be called the Academy Awards of football. Which is older? The Academy Awards is older. It's almost a century old. How old is the Super Bowl?
The answer I found is 53 years.
Oh, thank you, Siri. You are the best. The Academy Awards has been around almost a century, right? Like, we're talking about, like, in 9 more years. Sort of the most significant thing and why this is, like, why are you guys talking about the Oscars in this podcast that's supposed to be about musical theater history? I want to tell you why. The first best picture in the Academy Awards is what?
The Broadway Melody.
Oh, the Broadway Melody. Yeah, the Broadway Melody. Musicals are a big part of Hollywood. As a matter of fact, like, literally there has been a musical in Best Picture almost every decade, except for the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s.
Yeah, there's like a big split between 1969 with Oliver and 2003 with Chicago.
It is what it is. That's a pretty long gap between like Oscar wins. You know, like there's been a lot of great musicals though, right? Like My Fair Lady, The Sound of Music,
An American in Paris,
Oliver,
West Side Story.
Yeah.
Another gap I wanted to talk about in this with the Oscars is the presidency. We had a little a little stint with Betty Davis in there for 2 months before Walter Wagner, who was the one before, took back over. And then it was the Boys Club up until 1979 to 1983 with Faye Cannon. And then the second official woman, or third if you count Bette Davis, was Cheryl Boone Isaacs from 2013 to 2017. And then, just like after the election, it was the Boys Club again.
Even like most recently, like the Oscars had to be forced to be more diverse because like earlier they were at like, what, 73% white male? I mean, like I hear that Meatloaf votes in the Oscars, which, you know, honestly, an interesting thing, like going back to talking about like a little bit about Louis B. Mayer, I call him Louis.
Louis B. Mayer
really wanted these awards started so he could like control the Hollywood industry better. So like the great quote for him is like, found the best way to handle filmmakers was to hang medals all over them. If I got them cups and awards, they kill themselves to produce what I want. And like, you know, it's like terrible, but also ingenious. The Academy Awards has been like, I enjoyed watching them when I was a kid, when I believed that they were, you know, a little bit more fair. I don't know if I necessarily believe that, which brings me to the important conversation of talking about the Academy Awards basically said that Hamilton wouldn't be allowed to get an Oscar because that works that are essentially promotional or instructional are not eligible, nor are the works that are essentially unfiltered records of performances. So they say. So the rule barring Hamilton, allegedly, so this is citing Rule 2, Section G of the 93rd Academy Award Rules, which takes pandemic-mandated movie theater closures into account and states that the committee will evaluate all matter of rules and eligibility. Its members determined that Hamilton does not qualify. So, like, I feel like they made, like, a special exception to allow films in, but then also carved out a special exception for Hamilton to be left out.
How convenient!
So, here comes the armed battalion. To remind you of my love, I have to say that, like, even if you cut off the credits and the intro, even if you cut all that off, and they sort of go over this in the Film Theorists. I think you should check them out. That you'll like look at a whole bunch of different movies and TV shows and whatnot, media a whole different way. Okay. Yeah, they're a YouTube channel. They contest that Hamilton most definitely should be able to get an Oscar because it is a filtered movie. It can't possibly be an unfiltered movie because it was built with three different recordings of the show, two of which had an audience and one that did not have an audience. The one that didn't have an audience, they had a lot of different camera angles. Yeah, and the people, the glorious people of the Academy decided that it wouldn't be eligible for an Oscar, even though technically, like, if you look at the rules and what the film is, then logically any person would see that obviously makes the idea of a film. But I would assume that the Academy would rather have Lin-Manuel make
In the Heights.
Right. He better get an Oscar for that.
That one I can see at least being nominated.
Because then he can get a double Oscar when he finally makes Hamilton the film, which I'm sure is what they really
I'm
want.
I'm sure they're it's coming down the pipeline. Yeah. But yeah, that's another amazing movie that I'm sure will get lots of Oscar buzz unless something else really amazing comes out to just blow it out of the water. But I mean, Lin's gold right now, so.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Tonys are back. Coming Sunday, September 26th on CBS and Paramount Plus, streaming live at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time, plus a bonus after performance, aptly named Broadway's Back, a multi-platform celebration of the best Broadway, a unique special program that will celebrate the return to live theater and unforgettable performances commemorating the American Theater Wing's 74th annual Tony Awards.
Wow, I cannot wait to see that. That is definitely something that's a not-miss kind of event.
The 74th Tony Awards, unfortunately, will have no in-person audience. The official eligibility cutoff date for Broadway productions opening in 2019-2020 season, there are only about 18 shows that really are eligible to win an award. And because these were all of the shows that sort of existed before February 19th, 2020, when Broadway closed. And those shows are A Christmas Carol, Grand Horizons, The Great Society, The Height of the Storm, The Inheritance, Linda Vista, My Name is Lucy Barton, Sea Wall, A Life, Slave Play, The Sound Inside. For original musical, we have Jagged Little Pill.
Oh, yeah. I've heard really good things about that. I know someone who went to see it and brought me back the playbill.
So is this about Alanis Morissette's life, or?
No, it's one of those jukebox musicals.
Oh, really? Is it based off of that album?
There's different songs from Alanis Morissette's work, and it deals a lot.
That defined my 90s.
Yes. You live, you learn. Yeah, and so it's really. I'm really amazing. That one's one I really want to see. And Slave Play, I heard really amazing things in the interview. Jeremy O'Harris, The Daily Show.
It's a play about race, sex, power relationships, trauma, and interracial relationships. It sounds like a pretty cool show.
And also with Jagged Little Pill, it also deals with issues of identity in terms of like LGBT folk.
Yeah, that's awesome, Kevin. Original musicals up is The Lightning Thief, the Percy Jackson musical.
Yeah.
Moulin Rouge is another one, definitely. Moulin Rouge, the musical.
Moulin Rouge, yes.
Yep. The Tina Turner musical, which I think is about time.
Yes, and I've heard some of this. I've heard all these, and it's really nice. There's some really great stuff in there.
And then there's some awesome play revivals as well with Betrayal, Frankie and Johnny in the Clair de Lune, The Rose Tattoo, and one of my favorites, Soldier's Play. And that's a drama by Charles Fuller. The play uses a murder mystery to explore the complicated feelings of anger and resentment that some African Americans have towards one another. It's a really interesting story. I strongly suggest checking it out.
Yeah, that definitely sounded like it would be good as well.
Yeah, but those are all the shows up for Best Play, Best Revival of a Play, all those great awards. And we're going to find out who all the winners are and all those awesome performances and post-performances for all you musical theater fiends that have been dying because you haven't had your fix, because there is no live theater really through this terrible, terrible pandemic that has taken so many. The Tony Awards are around the corner, and you're going to see a lot of great work.
Coming back.
Yeah.
Broadway's coming back.
We're back, baby.
But yeah, and also we talk a lot about movie musicals because most of what we are watching is movies that are musicals.
Yeah, and it's super available to us. It's not like we can go out to a Broadway show, which would be cool, or even a local theater show.
Although...
yeah, things are turning around,
We are going to go see...
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Something Rotten. And we are going to talk about that afterwards, because that'll be the first show since we started the podcast that we can go attend in a live theater at Croswell Opera House in Michigan.
Man. It's so exciting. So exciting to see live theater again.
And we will be back to talk about Annie to start our season 2. Thank you all for taking a little detour with us. Well, thank you very much for listening. I am Kevin.
And I'm Chris.
We're talking history. We're talking musical history on this podcast.